Thank you very much, Ron. Our third speaker is Richard Shankman, who, as I mentioned, is the founder and editor of George Mason University's History News Network. He's associate professor of history at George Mason. He's a fellow of the Society of American Historians and an Emmy Award-winning investigative reporter. He's been a producer and writer for numerous programs on the History Channel, Discovery Channel, and Learning Channel. He's the author of 6 New York Times bestselling books in history. Educated at Vassar and Harvard University, he has studied the American presidents for 2 decades, including working on the papers of Andrew Jackson. Rick?
Following Ron Paul is not a good idea. It's like following a dog show that, you know, really won over people. I'm going to take a slightly more academic approach here. The bad news is I'm going to risk boring you in the interest of trying to put the rating of presidents into historical context. The good news is I may fail, and perhaps despite my best efforts, you'll actually find some of this interesting. Amongst ourselves, historians have always secretly been grateful to Warren Harding. While we often struggle to assess other presidencies, you could always count on Harding being dead last. This was a great comfort. Now comes Ivan along to tell us that we cannot even have this soupçon of confidence. Harding on his list comes in 6th. Our president must have heard of Ivan's new assessment. It accounts for his indifference to public discontent. If a Harding, that slob in Alice Roosevelt's fine jab, can rise, then most certainly there's hope for himself. And Bush, as far as we know, never kept a mistress on the side. What I want to focus on is talking about this business of rating the presidents as a parlor game. You hear that all the time. I want to take issue with that. In a parlor game, there are rules. In cards, you can count the joker or you can't. In charades, you cannot speak a word without incurring a penalty. In checkers and chess, you must move the pieces in certain ways and not in others. Rating presidents is an altogether different type of game. There are no rules. Should we count what a president does in his private life or not? Do we give him credit as an orator if someone else writes his speeches or not? Do we penalize him if he happens to have siblings like Billy Carter who are always getting into trouble or not? Part of the fun of the presidential ratings game is that there are no rules. It is this astonishing freedom from the bounds of ordinary conventions, this freedom to say anything we want about the presidents, for example, that Ronald Reagan is the greatest president in United States history, Gallup poll, February 2001, that makes this game so irresistible. Furthermore, it is relentlessly democratic, a perfect game for our times. One need know nothing. I mean this almost literally, in order to play the game. You do not have to be a historian to have an opinion about the presidents. Soon as you step forth in this world and cry out for your mama, you are entitled in America to your opinion about the people who have run this country. This fact gives this game an aspect of ridiculousness that one does not associate with parlor games like chess or checkers. This is why I insist that rating presidents is not a parlor game. No self-respecting parlor game could survive for long under these circumstances. In effect, we treat checkers with more seriousness than we do presidential ratings. What does this say about us? I think that it suggests the unseriousness with which we often approach politics. This is not to say that rating presidents is unseriousness. It is just the way that we have done so. Can we actually rate presidents? Let us ask that most fundamental of questions. Consider Ronald Reagan, for example. Reagan is known, of course, as the president who helped reshape our country and the world by becoming a spokesman for the free enterprise system. No other president, save possibly for Calvin Coolidge, a Reagan hero, incidentally, exalted capitalism with as much gusto as the former official spokesman for General Electric, Ronald Reagan. But how shall we assess his contribution? I heard historian Vijay Brashad from Trinity College at a conference over this weekend, the American Historical Association meeting up in New York, trace the history of Islamist fundamentalism in Pakistan to the decision of the International Monetary Fund in the early 1980s to force the government there to abandon its expensive health care program for the poor. At the time, the IMF's decision was regarded by conservatives as a necessary reform for flabby socialistic countries. But what was the result in Pakistan and elsewhere in the region was that the demolition of healthcare programs left healthcare up to faith-based organizations like Hamas, Hezbollah, and the radical groups in Pakistan. This gave Islamists a striking opportunity, and they have made, I'm sad to say, the most of it. Now, no one would argue that radical Islamism is wholly the effect of Ronald Reagan's free enterprise rhetoric. That would be silly. But his rhetoric had unintended consequences, as did his support of the Mujahideen in Afghanistan. Did Reagan understand this? Have we understood this? And once we do, how do we factor it into our assessment of his presidency? Can we be sure he is still a great president? Are presidents responsible for the forces their own actions unleash? Are they to be held accountable for what comes afterward? Should we hold Calvin Coolidge responsible for the Great Depression, which began under his successor's watch? One of the most striking things to me about the categories we use to evaluate presidents is how familiar they are. Great, near great, not so great, good, bad. We could be rating baseball players, except that we measure ball players with far more precision than we do presidents. When rating pitchers, for example, we base our tally on statistics that measure their performance precisely. We know how many balls, strikes, and errors they had, and then add up the numbers to arrive at a judgment. With presidents, we have no such precise measurements. This is no accident, as it happens. We have a vital need to use a loose matrix because it is democratic. If we used a methodology that was more precise, we would perforce have to use a grammar and vocabulary that goes beyond the grasp of ordinary voters. And this would defeat the purpose. What is the purpose? We do not usually ask ourselves this question. It seems self-evident to us that we should establish a hierarchy among the presidents. We should rank them for the same reason we rank ball players. It just seems natural. I would submit that there is actually a very good reason for ranking presidents, and it goes far beyond some ordinary human inclination to arrive at an order of things. It is to give us an idea of ourselves. The ranking of presidents is ultimately not about them. It is about us. It is about who we are and what values we cherish. In this, we have a great stake. History, unfortunately, is an extraordinarily messy neighborhood. There are not just good folks and bad folks, people who live in the good part of town and people who live across the railroad tracks on the bad side of town. There are good people who do bad things and bad people who do good things. And there are many people who simply drift. How they all interact in the world they make is therefore very complicated. This is why making sense of the past is difficult. It is to rescue us from this confusion that we rank presidents. Here at our fingertips is a way of making sense of the past and ourselves, and with very little effort, it would seem. It is, of course, a delusion. History is not so neat and simple. It is not filled with good guys and bad guys. Presidents do not ride into town on a white horse and clean things up. Ronald Reagan did not win the Cold War any more than FDR won World War II. Presidents do not shape history so much as be shaped by it. As Abraham Lincoln admitted in 1864, at the height of his near dictatorial powers, I claim not to have controlled events, but confess plainly that events have controlled me. At the heart of presidential rankings, therefore, is an assumption that is at the very least highly debatable. It is this. It is the belief that we truly learn something about ourselves by forcing presidents into the little boxes on our flowcharts of history. Take Reagan again. When we talk about his legacy, we consider a rather narrow spectrum of events. Traded arms for hostages, check. Bolstered the military, check. Lowered taxes, check. Increased the deficit, check. But did he win the Cold War? And what if he did? How do we assess his presidency if one of the unintended consequences of his presidency was to bolster the very forces that led to the rise of Islamist radicalism? What is victory? Is it victory when the seeds of an ensuing disaster, 9/11, say, are sown in a previous victory? How inadequate our little check boxes seem when we confront these rather large questions. This brings me back to Ivan's book. One of the main reasons I like Ivan Ilin's book and wanted to be on this panel is that it demonstrates in its fiercely consistent and courageous way how limited our system of categorizing presidents actually is. Ivan forces us, even as he employs a system of measurement, to beware of such measurement systems, the very strangeness of many of his results, which he himself admits. John Tyler coming in first, Warren Harding coming in sixth, suggests that the outcome of any rating system is determined by the means of measurement. This is no simple parlor game after all, it turns out. Upon reflection, measuring presidents raises questions rather than answering them. It is this that makes me most grateful to Ivan. I submit that we cannot resist playing the ratings game. I love to do it just as much as anybody. But after Ivan, we will never play the game the same way we have in the past. I know that I won't. For what Ivan has done is to help us see through the pretensions of rating systems. In particular, it breaks the grip the Schlesinger system has had over our imagination. An axe had to be taken to that old system. Ivan has wielded it expertly. No longer will anyone be able to pretend that historians sitting in judgment on Mount Olympus are able to decide who deserves to go into which category. Much as we would like to stand outside history, we cannot do so. You see, it is not only presidents who are human, but even we historians. They are not gods, and neither are we. It would make life easier if we were. Then we could settle once and for all the question of presidential rankings and rest in the knowledge that we had made sense of an untidy world. Alas, the world remains untidy. We simply have to learn to live with that.